Hey, Ryan, since you're not going to the game, where are you planning on watching the Wildcats?
I'll be stuck at the office, but I wish I could be lounging at home in front of my TV.
Yeah, me too. I've been thinking about getting like a big comfy recliner from Sam Levitt's Furniture.
Ooh, stylish.
Sam Levitt's Furniture has specials on a wide selection of recliners, so you can watch the game in style. You can check out a bunch of options at their Tucson locations. I'm thinking of getting one with swivel action.
Ooh.
But I kind of like the one I saw with cup holders.
Well, while Justin makes up his mind about which recliner he likes best, let's talk some sports.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast podcast right here on the Wildcaster app. Justin Spears with Dominic Bachaco, and usually a guy that we always tap in over the phone, an expert on Arizona basketball, but he's here with us because we're recording this podcast from McHale Center, and that's Bruce Pasco. Bruce, thanks for jumping on the podcast
awesome
live with us.
Awesome to be here.
Yeah, so Bruce, Arizona just beats UConn 73-58 Thursday night, and I mean, it was a game where we didn't really at least for me, I didn't really expect it the way it kind of turned out. DeAndre Ayton picked up two quick fouls, but Dušan Ristić rose to the challenge. 18 points, 10 rebounds. I've seen Dušan Ristić play better games at Arizona.
Absolutely.
But this was, I think, a very encouraging game, especially now that the Wildcats are going into conference play.
Well, I was just going to say, those things you heard Sean Miller talking about Dušan in the post-game press conference that we just played for you, you would have never in a million years thought that he was talking about Dušan Ristić unless he said his name. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was that kind of night for him, and hearing what Miller had to say about Dušan, you know, giving that speech to the team after the Bahamas fiasco and how he's kind of, and Miller was careful, he worded it carefully. He said that, you know, he was careful in avoiding saying that Dušan is responsible for the seven straight wins and the turnaround that we're kind of witnessing right now. But, I mean, Dušan played out of his mind. I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think he's that critical to Arizona as Sean Miller talked about tonight?
Well, I mean, there's so many guys on this team. I mean, he is in some sense, but, I mean, on any given night they can miss one of their key pieces and be fine against the vast majority of teams out there. But I think the interesting thing to me, I think Miller has been complimentary of him in some things before, but I think the thing tonight was that he gave them what they needed when DeAndre was out, and also showed a really kind of a mean streak, a little aggressiveness that you don't see in him. I mean, if anything, Dušan's almost too nice. I mean, he's a nice guy off the court, and he's, you know, and he does what he does. He's very efficient and, you know, calm on the court. But to see him tonight, he really got into it a little bit, and I think that's a good sign too.
And the stat of the night for me, I think, was that in Arizona's previous 12 games before tonight, their leading rebounder in every single one of those games. This might be a Bruce Pasco stat. Arizona's leading rebounder in every single game was DeAndre Ayton, and that stopped tonight. Obviously, yeah. Dušan Ristić again, 18 points, 10 rebounds. But it was just that kind of night.
And Miller even said or Dusan said this, that Miller came to him and said, I'm challenging you. I mean, out of all the players that Miller really wanted to challenge going forward, I mean, of course you're going to see Emmanuel Aycott. I mean, because he's battling with knee tendonitis. I mean, Dusan Ristic is a player where he's gotten to this point where he's been battling minutes with Caleb Tarzewski. He shared the same front court with Lauri Markkanen, but of course, you know, Lauri got all the publicity because he was a freshman phenom. And yet now he's in a similar position with DeAndre Ayton, where you kind of get this feeling that DeAndre Ayton or Dusan Ristic, no matter what he does, and as long as many games that he started, he's always kind of the forgotten child.
Mm-hmm.
And Miller made that clear, loud and clear today, that we don't talk about Dusan Ristic enough. I don't think that you talk does. About so people and that's the thing.
Other people don't.
I mean, Sean Miller talks about him all the time.
Yeah.
From the public eye, I'm just, you know, hearing murmurs and looking at all the social media reactions. Dusan doesn't play defense. And when you play
in a Sean Miller system,
well, exactly,
he's a lot better. I mean, he's gotten gradually better. I mean, that was a real problem for him the first couple of years, and yeah, kept him off the floor. But he's better. But you know, the problem with him is you're talking about DeAndre Ayton, who might be the number one pick in the draft, and this guy is like, you just don't see players like him. And so you had that, and you had Markkanen came in last year, and Caleb, who was a favorite son, who did all the right things, and he was an upperclassman too. So he has been like kind of
the forgotten child.
That's why I asked him. I asked Miller about that, and I asked Dusan about it too, and just what's it like for him to be in that position. And you know, he's probably one of the few guys who at this level who can handle that without much problem, because he's so modest and he's not a big ego guy. He doesn't need any of that. And he said, and it's true. Yeah, I'm sure that he's getting a lot better because he gets to play against DeAndre Ayton every day in practice. And who gets to do that? I mean, that's a really long-term mature way to look at it, because Dusan's going to have a great career, whether it's in the NBA or overseas. You know, I mean, he can, and part of the reason he's going to have a great career is because he grew so much here and playing against those guys.
Absolutely.
And Lowry's more of a different case, because Lowry was a stretch power forward.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just an entirely different player.
Completely different player to Dusan Ristic. And while DeAndre Ayton can knock down an outside jumper, he's more of a low post player. So he has that little battle every day in practice.
What was interesting to me tonight, what stuck out to me at least in the Miller press conference, and Bruce, I want to ask you about this because you know Arizona basketball more than anyone. Justin and I have talked about it all year. It's what we think Arizona lacks is that voice on the court, on and off the court, really, where in recent years you've seen guys like Kadeem Allen or TJ McConnell or Nick Johnson. Now, this year, we haven't really had that leader on or off the court, and you guys said it. No one's really talked, other than Sean Miller, no one's really talked about Dusan Ristic. So until Miller brought him up today and said, look, he gave this huge speech to the team after the Bahama loss. He came up to Miller and said, hey, I got some stuff to say to the team. And that blew my mind. I mean, I did not see Dusan being that guy at all. If I were to give you 12 guys on the team to put them in order on who I thought would step up and be that voice after three straight losses, Dusan would have been near the bottom of that list. So, yeah. Bruce, I mean, is Dusan that guy? I mean, more than we realize, is he that voice?
I think maybe occasionally we're going to see that from him. That might be a benefit from him. But it's tough for big guys to be the vocal leaders because they don't have the ball that much and they're – you know, they're back there or whatever, and you usually see it one of the guards and, you know, the point guard particularly or one of the key scorers. And there's some of that here too, but it's an interesting dynamic on this team because you have Dusan and Parker Jackson Cartwright who, you know, is in that position to be a leader, and he has some leadership qualities about him, but he's not an overly vocal guy, and, you know, so that's the thing with him too. But both of those guys, as Miller said, they've been through a lot of winning, a lot of great successes, and you know, I think the thing with Dusan, it hurt him more than any of these players to go in there and basically get embarrassed in the Bahamas, and you know, so it actually brought that out in him, which maybe long term is a good thing, but day to day, yeah, I think this team has a little bit of a concern about that. Where are they going to go
with kind of the non-conference coming to an end? We, of course, we all want to sit here and talk about the big game on December 30th. I mean, I'm assuming Arizona's going to jump up in the rankings. That's going to be a top 15 matchup at McHale Center. everybody's got it circled, but where do you just kind of evaluate, Bruce, the non-conference? Arizona's sitting at 10-3. Of course, Sean Miller says that the seasons are always going to be judged by non-conference, Pac-12 play, Pac-12 tournament, NCAA tournament. But we kind of look at it, and you asked Sean Miller about this, we kind of look at it as pre-Bahamas,
yeah.
Bahamas, yeah. Post-Bahamas.
That's the way, exactly. I mean, you know, because this post-Bahamas is kind of what we thought the preseason would look like, although they still have shown some weaknesses in defense, et cetera, but, and offensive rebound and little things like that that they – but this is more of what we expected. And the pre-Bahamas was, you know, everything was looking good, and but they weren't playing great teams, and then the Bahamas was a complete disaster. And so this is a really weird preseason because of that. And how do you evaluate – the whole thing? And I'm kind of struggling with that myself, because you can't throw that out.
Yeah.
And I think maybe what you get out of it is, yeah, there's a little bit of weirdness and some snowball effect playing three games, but also definitely some things came out of it that they knew they had to get better at, and especially on defense and, you know, and dealing with smaller teams out there, things like that, that they know they had to work on. And maybe, you know, maybe that was a good thing that they were really, I mean, that was just smacked over the head. They had to learn those lessons.
You know, Miller made a point in the postgame presser tonight, as he has several times already this season, that Arizona's non-conference slate wasn't a cakewalk. I mean, they obviously, you get those teams in there. I can't draw a blank on some of the easier teams they played, but
Maryland, Baltimore, Kansas.
So of course they're going to have those teams, but Arizona played a top 10 Texas A&M team, a tough Alabama team that could make a run in the tournament with a lottery pick in Colin Sexton.
Top five pick.
They played UConn, I think, is a lot more talented than people give him credit for. I mean, Arizona played some tough games, and we're seeing a lot of close contests. They're not really blowing anyone out, but, you know, like you guys said, it was kind of three different parts of the non-conference slate, where you had the first few games where they're playing these cupcake teams and they're blowing them out because they should be blowing them out.
Smoking everybody.
Right, and that's what should have happened in those first few games. And they go to Bahamas, face some steeper competition, even Purdue. I mean, another ranked team in Purdue. So, you know, it was
a humble pie.
Right, and it was, I mean, I think Miller has a point. I don't think we give him enough credit for the non-conference schedule they played this year. And coming out 10-3, I mean, obviously, I think I can speak for everyone. I think we all thought that they were going to be 13-0.
and people look at a 10-3 record and be like, oh, well, I mean, Arizona didn't exceed mm-hmm. the expectations. And yeah, they were supposed to go 13-0, but didn't have Raleigh Alkins, Alex Barcelo. I mean, he was dealing with some kind of injury thing. Emmanuel Acott and his knee tendonitis.
Trier now.
And Alonzo Trier with his little knee situation. I think Arizona fell under the expectations. I will give you that. But, I mean, in terms of the distractions and just kind of all the adversity that they've had to overcome, I mean, it's really amazing. And Sean Miller even said this. He's like, you look at everything that we've overcome this season. I mean, you talk about the offseason with the FBI investigation, the Bahamas trip, all these injuries. You know, we could look back at this and say, wow, this was the best thing that could have ever happened for Arizona. And say Arizona does have the season that a lot of people are expecting them to have. I mean, Bruce, I don't know about you, but this has been so far one of the more, I guess, crazy or
up and down
unpredictable
season.
But, I mean, hindsight, it could work out for Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird, I mean, there's always that story behind the scenes. We don't really know what's going on. How much does this team affect, get affected by the fact that Book Richardson isn't on the bench putting his arm around guys, stuff like that? We don't have no idea what the dynamic is there, because nobody's talking about it. And then the other factor is this team not only played cupcakes, but they had to play NAU for political reasons. And UMBC was part of the Bahamas thing, and they didn't really have a choice there. So they had these relatively easy teams to beat up on. On top of it, incredible hype behind this team because this market is basically just about them and U of A football. They get so much attention here. Everywhere they go, they're superstars. They were ranked preseason number one. I mean, so all this huge hype, and then three easy wins, and they go in the Bahamas, and boom, and then the reality hit, like you said. And so it's just a It's a strange thing.
It's weird.
You know, yeah.
The other thing that I think was hyped up a lot tonight, obviously coming in, was Alonzo Trier's knee, coming off that what Sean Miller called a mild knee sprain on Monday.
Yeah.
And Alonzo Trier, obviously not the night we expect. I mean, I don't want to say not the night we expect him to have. Not the night we're accustomed to him having. 5 of 11 shooting, 2 of 6 from beyond the arc, and he only got to the foul line twice, which I think is the most telling stat. He might have not been as aggressive through the key. And I mean, because that's who Alonzo Trier is. I think right. When he gets aggressive and gets to the line, I think that's when he's at his best. Again, 15 points. I think Dusan said it after the game. I think it was Dusan. He said, you know, Trier, his knee affected him, but he had 15 points.
He had a bad game and then right. Only still
right.
dropped 15
bad game
points.
And he was their third leading scorer. So if he has those kind of nights, that's huge. Yeah. But, I mean, where's Alonzo Trier's knee at? We obviously don't know the full status of his health. Yeah. We know it's not 100%, but how's that going to affect him moving forward?
Well, they got 8 days, 9 days off now, so he'll need that, and mm-hmm. I think he'll be fine. This is actually perfect timing for him to get a little bit in there, actually a lot, played 35 minutes, but to get, you know, to keep in that flow, and then now they'll get probably they get 4 days off. He'll, knowing him, he'll probably take 1 day off and then do some running or something. But you know, but he'll
right
at least get away from it a little bit and then get back to ASU. So he should be fine. They said there's, you know, because it was a sprain, a mild sprain, there's no tear, you know, there's nothing, no damage if he had gone. It was strictly a matter of how much pain he could handle tonight. And I think you saw that early. In fact, it was funny, our photographer Kelly Presnell was out here literally like 3 hours before the game. And Kelly came to me and said, you should see, Trier's not, he's not aggressive, he's not jumping, he's not dunking, he was, you know, and the way Kelly described it, I thought, you know, maybe he wasn't even going to play. But I figured he would, but he might be limited and tentative, and he was early, but because he's such an intense competitor, I think he got over it. But it seemed like early, a couple of his shots wasn't quite comfortable setting up, spotting up for those, and then, as you said, Dom, just that he probably didn't get to the line the way he normally does, so maybe a little bit, but just you know, he's an incredible competitor, and to would do what he did with that issue shows you that.
Well, he had a fast break dunk that put them
the foul
above by 15 points. There was a stretch of the game where UConn cut it pretty close, and then towards the latter part of the second half, when they really started mm-hmm. to pull away, mm-hmm. Alonzo Trier had a fast break recorder, dunk, yeah. and then when he dunked it, mm-hmm. I was like, I thought about Kelly's
point,
thing. I was like, yeah, he's not dunking Kelly.
Well, at that point, he had. I don't even know if he was thinking about his knee. I mean, that's the thing. It was a mental thing a little bit to start with, and pain tolerance, and he just busted through that. So you know, that's a good thing too.
Fun fact about Alonzo Trier: this I can confirm is a Bruce Pascoe stat. Alonzo Trier needs 16 more points to hit the 1,000 point mark at Arizona. Pretty impressive. Only 4 Wildcats have done it before.
And guess who's the next game up?
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be, I think if he gets against mm-hmm. ASU, I believe he'd be in there like the 7th or 8th fastest to do. There's mm-hmm. a couple of other guys that just did it in 59. This will be his 60th game against ASU, I believe. But yeah, no, pretty impressive, although, you know, it's kind of weird. It's weird to think of it in terms of games for him because his whole career has been interrupted. He missed whatever it was, 8 games as a freshman with that broken wrist, and then the suspension last year, missing half the season. So here he is as a junior, still playing, you know, what a lot of guys would be playing at the end of their sophomore years.
The stat I did, Bruce, you brought it up. You're right. The stat was that only 4 players have hit the 1,000-point mark in fewer than 58 games. Obviously more than 1,000. I thought that was weird because Sean Elliott wasn't on that list, and I was going, wait a minute, how is Bob Elliott on the list of 1,000-point scorers, but Sean Elliott's not? But anyway.
Yeah, it's a weird stat. It's a mm-hmm. weird stat to say, but the bottom line is Trier is one of the fastest to get to 1,000 points in his career, and that's impressive. You know, I mean, there's always context involved in these kind of things because some of those teams, you know, as great of players Bob Elliott was back in the day, he, you know, I don't know, but I'm guessing, you know, maybe some of his teams weren't quite as balanced as this one is, and even, you know, it's hard to get the opportunity, but Trier to put up those numbers on teams that he's been with that are pretty balanced is a lot.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's in a few months into his junior year already putting up 1,000 points, so pretty impressive.
All-American, or preseason All-American, so far, so living up to the hype.
Oh, absolutely.
Bruce, holiday plans?
Not really. Just trying to get away from it for a couple of days, and you know, but
you deserve
but yeah, you don't. You know, it's hard to get holidays here during the season, but fortunately they're not playing on Christmas this year, and they haven't really since they went to that Diamond Head thing what, 3 or 4 years ago. And I don't think Miller liked that. I think he likes having Christmas off, because have to, nowadays you pretty much have to sacrifice your Thanksgiving every year, so at least they take Christmas off, which is good for everyone around the program, and good for people like me too.
All right, well, that's our, I guess, our kind of non-conference wrap-up podcast. We'll have another podcast closer to December 30th. That's when Arizona takes on the Arizona State Sun Devils. Rubs our hands menacingly, because that should be a fun one. I'm excited for that game. You got a number 3 Arizona State now taking on a possible top 15 Arizona team in McHale Center.
Got to find out when the last time that's happened, ever.
It should be fun. Anyways.
Well, it hasn't happened with them being number 3.
Right.
We know that.
Top 15, I don't know. I think we're all going to be checking history.
James
books,
Harden?
I think.
Historical. No, because even when they had James Harden, Arizona wasn't even ranked.
Right.
So.
That whole year, though?
This could be a first, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess by the time they got packed up.
Yeah, you had to go back to... Yeah, I think 95, 96, there were some times where they were both ranked, but yeah, it's highly unusual, unprecedented the level that it's at, and you know, when we're talking about a rivalry, it's always kind of interesting. Even when ASU's not that good up there in Tempe, they can often give them a game, and then some, I think even here 1 year, when they weren't that great, they came down and beat them, so not too long ago, so you know, anything can happen, and this year it's going to be unreal. It's just it's kind of early in the season, so there's not, you can't project what it's going to mean stake wise for the title or the conference or whatever, but it's still going to be big.
What better way to kick off Pac-12 play than
top 15 matchup? Top 5 team
doesn't get any better than this.
Top 5 team coming into McHale Center that's not Arizona.
Imagine that. Anyways, that's Bruce Pasco, Dominic Pachaco. I'm Justin Spears. Thanks for listening to the Wildcast podcast. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and definitely don't forget to download the free Wildcaster app. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.